My name is Anne. I'm in Nablus in North Palestine. Actually, everyone calls me Anna here, so Anna will do quite nicely. I've been here since the 28th of December. I came for 1 week. And I found such an incredibly wonderful atmosphere and this great city that I've just stayed ever since. So I've been here for, I think it's getting on for 5 months now. It's a city under siege. It is now in the, it's in the 411th day of the siege of Nablus, I think, where the city has been under almost constant lockdown since the 1st of April last year, 2002. It's unbelievable that a city of 200,000 people can be under lockdown, but it is. It means nothing in, nothing out without permission of the Israeli soldiers on the checkpoints to the east and the west. You cannot go north or south because they're huge mountains of some 2,000 meters high. They're very, very rocky and there are no roads over them. And during this lockdown period, they just come into the city at will, any time of the day or night, but usually at night, but sometimes in the day. Just arrest groups of people. They've taken 12 girls recently, aged 17, which is a terrible thought. They did nothing, actually. They were just in the school. They were joking about something, and the Israelis thought they were planning to kill Israel or bomb Israel or something. They've taken them to prisons. We don't know where they are. They've taken 25,300 men from this city under arrest since April the 3rd last year, 25,300. Of course, many of those are back now, having received a 1 year or a 6 month prison sentence, but 200 of them are under 700 year prison sentences. They're all young men, aged 15 upwards, who have received these bizarre and illegal sentences. There was never any charge, there was never any trial, there was never any lawyer. We do not know which prison they are in, and there is no contact, no visitation, no phone call, and no letters. It's so illegal that there is no word to describe it. Every day since I've been here, people have been killed. The smallest number in any month since I have been here was 55, so it's almost two a day. In the last weekend, really since April the 15th, we've had a major, major push against Nablus. On the 15th, there was a huge siege on an area of the hill called Al-Makhia, where there was a siege of a house full night. It lasted 7 or 8 hours. It ended up with one of the greatest guys in the city, Mazen Freitach, dead, two others severely wounded and taken prisoner. Ever since then, one after another, every day there have been killings. Every single day there have been killings of youth, children and adults, including, of course, the murder of my very good friend, Nazif Darwaze, an Associated Press journalist. I was standing with the group when he was just targeted by an Israeli soldier and the right side of his head was blown off. I do have a picture of this, which I will send for you. The website is pretty horrible. Nazir is a very large man, over 6 feet tall, most unusual for Palestinian to be so big. He's very broad as well. He had a very large moustache, again unusual, such a large one. He was also older than most of the press photographers. We were standing in a group. A tank had got stuck in a narrow street, extraordinarily, because they demolished the walls then, with it trying to get it out, of course, of people's houses. And we were taking pictures and recording this event, and because the tank was stuck, a group of children, of course, started throwing stones. They're very small stones. They fit in a palm of a seven-year-old, you know, they're not big. And a soldier knelt down on one knee between a APC and a wall in an alley, took aim, there are two videos of this, and fired at Nazir's right eye and took the right side of his skull off. And it was absolutely deliberate. I called the IOF spokesman. She's Major Sharon Weinstock. She's entirely reasonable on the phone, but I'm afraid none of it's truth. It sounds reasonable. She said, we were forced to open fire when we came under heavy stoning in a tank. Real story was that they did come under stoning. I have pictures. I have 8 of them, which are utterly amazing. They show the size of every stone. They are so small that anyone could have been killed for these stones. It's outrageous. They also injured 17 children and young people, many of whom are still in the hospital, just shooting at the children, throwing stones. They were shooting from inside a tank.
4:25 a.m.
This is Dan Gwynn and Nebula. 376-232. I'm standing in the middle of the Midan Al Hussein, the main square of the city, which has been occupied by Israeli tanks and jeeps. They have fired indiscriminately on a sunny afternoon shopping crowd. They have killed two people, just standing by our ambulance, which has just taken one. They have badly injured eight other people. They are still firing sporadically. I'm just going down the nearby street now because there's a lot of gunfire at the bottom of this. And I'll call you later when I find out what exactly happened here.
4:27 a.m.
Dennis, I'm sorry, as I just ran off then, our ambulance was shot up. Our driver got a bullet through the hand. Our driver got a bullet through the hand. They actually shot directly at our ambulance. Driver got a bullet through the hand. One of the volunteers has also been shot. I'm standing. I can see the soldier shooting at the bottom of the street. If there's any more news, I'll call you back. Actually, on a peaceful afternoon, shooting at a UPMI ambulance, giving a driver a bullet through the hand, and a volunteer is also shot, a volunteer ambulance assistant. Okay, I'll come back to you.
4:35 a.m.
I want to hear it. 4:40 a.m. This is Anna Gain in the main square in Nablus, a young volunteer who again, another individual shot to the right by the bullet. Our ambulance came under fire again, and it came to pick him up. There's absolutely indiscriminate shooting an ambulance there. They're shooting down every single alleyway in the area, and every single side where they have everything covered. Another ambulance out. No, this is not a press. Yes, we're trying to get through. It's a complete nightmare, Dennis. I'm just looking ahead to the tree because it's very unpleasant. Okay.
End of message.
Their resistance consists of having a gun against the might of the fourth largest army on the planet. Hello again, Suzanne from Nablus. I made a few notes today. I had a very traumatic day visiting families whose houses had been destroyed, whose families were murdered and imprisoned. So I thought I'd just make a couple of notes for you and tell you what's happening here. About half an hour ago, there were 10 massive explosions. That's about 20 minutes ago, which means more houses destroyed. I was in the Hilfer family house today where the father is dead, the mother is very sick. It was totally demolished day before, 3 days ago. This morning at 6 o'clock, I went to the Hamdan family house. I finally found it in the old city. It's a 1,000-year-old house. I heard the bombs one or two day before yesterday. It was still hot and smoldering. It's totally destroyed. How on earth can this continue? I was at a house today where the family has been told to pack everything because their home will be destroyed shortly. Oh, my God, the families who can. Afterwards, there's another home of a family, the Marshouds, who have already had two houses totally destroyed, two Mercedes cars, one stolen by the Israeli army, the other destroyed, plus their factory confiscated. They now live between two houses, one on either side, threatened. So when those houses are bombed, their house will go too. Yesterday, I was at the house of the Hamash family, 26 rooms, 30 people, 5 families, completely destroyed. Even a tank brought into the living room, knocking down the whole of the side of the house. On Shara al-Quds,
A 12-apartment, sixth-floor house was destroyed. A 16-apartment house was destroyed. Every single day now we're having house destruction, house demolition here. For the past 5 days, we've just been waiting news of the murder of our friends who are targeted killings. The terror just escalates. I was at a house this afternoon where there were 10 women, 17 of their sons are in life for 700 years, in prison for 700 years or more. 5 of their sons have been killed, 7 of their sons have been seriously injured, 1 paralyzed, and 9 of their sons are wanted. It's a joke, wanted, because wanted means either to be killed or to be put in prison for 700 years. Oh. If we could make anything on this house demolition, come back to me, will you? It's just almost too much to bear here now. It really is too much. The house I was in earlier today, it's been a long day, house of a guy called Martin Freitag. He was finally killed by a missile from a missile like a rocket. He was a fighter. One will not wonder why when of the 5 brothers, you know that 1 was killed, 3 are in the prison, and his 2 sisters were murdered in April. Now Marzen too is dead. My friend, a fighter called Amin, has 1 brother murdered, 2 more in the prison for 100 years. The husbands of all 3 of his sisters are in prison for life. The husband of 1 murdered. They have no rights of visitation or letters or anything. He and his wife were shot a year ago. She was in hospital for 4 months. The bedroom in the house has been shot at many times. He was in the prison in the Nakba from age 15 to 26. He's 28 now when he was captured. And now he will get 700 years. You know, so what wonder that he is a that he's a fighter. What wonder. Now we have another 70-year-old, never see her husband again. My best friend, Tahir, her husband was killed last August. Her 3 brothers are in the prison for 700 years. Her father was in prison for 15 years and 9 years. Her mother had a leg broken by an Israeli rock and was shot. This is absolutely unbelievable, isn't it? Absolutely unbelievable. And these are stories every day. We need 100 people for 10 years here to get down half the stories of the terrorism that is being visited upon the innocent people of Balata and Nablus every minute of every day. Anyway, we send hello to California, and now I'm going to go to sleep. Bye-bye. Nablus has been completely closed for 3 days, what a soldier described to me as under lockdown, which is very significant, isn't it, since it's what the American prison authorities call it when they lock down their prisons. We've been closed for 3 days. We knew something was going to happen. We're expecting something very bad tonight. This afternoon at 3 o'clock, a relatively small force of Israelis came to arrest a young man, his name Abed Zamlech, age 22, a recent graduate, yesterday graduated actually from Al-Najaf University. He's a member of Fateh, the PLO youth organization, and he was visiting his mother when all hell broke loose in the house when it was attacked simultaneously by 80mm tank cannon shells, 25mm bullets, and M16 Uzi and Galalia machine guns. The tank, interestingly, is tank number 2. I've had a lot of brushes with tank number 2 in my 5 months here. It's got a psychotic crew. An APC, 2 Hummers, the officer class jeeps. Believe me, they look very sinister. They're very wide, very big, tiny little slits for the windscreen and very small windows. Very sinister looking. With them were 2 jeeps and, of course, tank number 2. Imagine it if the Berkeley police came to arrest a person arrest one suspect with all this lot. The outside of their house, I was there, the outside of the house is completely covered with holes right through. These things are so high-powered that when they go through the outside wall, they actually go through 2 inside walls, bed themselves into the 4th wall at the back of the house, imagine. And, of course, the house looks like a colander. It's completely wrecked, the ground floor is mother's house, completely wrecked. They put 4 people in the hospital, a baby, a woman. He was wounded. I don't know who the other person who was in the hospital is, actually, but a baby, a woman, and Abed Kusini. He is a Reuters correspondent. Abed is one of the bravest photographers in the business. He is described to me by the fighters of Balata as the king of the fighter photographers. It's quite a compliment from the latter fighters. They're the bravest in the business too. He's been shot many times. This is not serious. He was shot in the thigh, in the upper thigh, but it's just lucky that it wasn't serious. He's in the hospital because they're big bullets. I spoke to him just now and I said, how are you, Abed? He said, I'm absolutely fine. How are you, Anna? Because there are only five of us here now. There's me, and there are four Palestinians, or five, could be six, two from Nablus Television, one Reuters, and two AP, and that's it. There isn't one foreign reporter in this city at all. I mean, I'm not an official journalist, except, you know, in the sense of print, but there's just nobody reporting this at all. In order to report anything as it is, you have to be there. If you stay in the hotel room, as the BBC reporters do in Jerusalem, if you're probably 60 kilometres away, and just do a little report, today in Nablus, 15 children were shot. What does that mean? What does that mean? I've seen the shattered thigh, the 25mm bullet actually shatters the thigh, actually shatters it. There's a hole in the bone, there's a kind of space. You know, when it goes in the chest, it actually takes away the ribs. If it's from the back, an absence of ribs for a little patch on the front, because it's so big, it just takes the ribs away. When it goes in the lower chest, from the front or the back, it takes part of the liver, and the bleeding is unbelievable. It's like the quarter bucket. When it's in the abdomen or in the groin, the same thing happens. When it's in the head, of course, it's somewhat different because they're unconscious. When it's in the face, it's unbelievable, the gurgling in the throat, because their throats are filled with blood. Children, 11 years old, with huge dum-dum bullets exploding in their mouth, half their tongue gone, their soft palate, their hard palate. You can see their brain when they open their mouth. It's just not unusual, it's not a one-off. It's happened to many children. When you see the head on the ground, when it's been shot off by the huge rocket from the attachment, the M16, I forgot what the attachment is called now, it's quite something. Because a few minutes earlier, well, a moment earlier, it was a boy. And now it's a torso and a head. I mean, it's unimaginable, the crime that's happening here. And unless you are here, there is no way to understand this crime unless you are here. There's no way.
Are there no international journalists there with you now?
For more than 2 months, not even Al Jazeera have been here since March the 9th. They're from May. For 3 months, not one international journalist in this city. Only six of the bravest Palestinian journalists on the planet. One who was killed, one's been shot in the foot, one's been shot in the thigh, and that's in the last month. Well, first of all, I mean, just in law, the point of law, every people has the right enshrined in international law and the Geneva Convention also to resist occupation by whatever means necessary, including the words are the use of force and firearms. No freedom fighter with his single weapon has ever attacked an Israeli civilian, ever. When they attack Israeli soldiers, and Israeli soldiers are in their land attacking them. Really, they are defending their land rather than attacking Israelis. I mean, you have to get these words right. And they are not, who are the gunmen? The gunmen are the ones who are illegally killing civilians in a country they illegally occupy by every law and international statute. They are the occupiers illegally. They have contravened 69 UN resolutions. You know, it is clear who is defending this land and who is attacking it. And the fighters, of course, here, the freedom fighters, know that their life, that this can end only in death, because when they attack an Israeli military camp, they are two, usually, and, you know, they're attacking what? I don't know, thousands? I don't know how many are in military camp one and military camp two, but I know it can only end in death. And in Britain, a serviceman can only be made, the citation can only be written if the guy had a 95% chance of dying when he undertook the operation in defense of his land and his friends. Wow. But these guys are terrorists, even though they have a 100% chance of dying. They know they're going to die. Most of them will die before they're 22. All the ones I know, the five that have died recently, have all been under 24. They've spent most of their life in the prison. All of them have between two and four brothers killed, murdered, and the rest of the family is in the prison or injured badly. Their fathers and mothers were also in the prison and injured, and right back to 1948. And they have only a gun against this huge army. The thing which is absolutely astonishing, is that the world can believe that a guy in his own country, in his own village, in his own house, is termed a terrorist when he shoots back at an illegal invasion by illegal troops who are attacking his village, his town, or his house. I mean, I cannot believe that anyone can term this terrorism. Honestly, it's outrageous. I'm a very peaceful woman. When you are here, it's a different reality. The reason they throw the stones, they sit in the palm of the hand. They've just been teaching me this afternoon, but I can only go about a 50th of their distance. It's because they have absolutely no dignity without the stones, because after 6 months here, I understand that the humiliation here is 100%, and that includes me as well. I cannot do anything, Dennis. I can't pass a checkpoint. I can't go anywhere. I can't come back into Nablus if I do. I can't go to a village. I can't visit a friend. And when I come out, I can't bring a single photograph. I have to email 400 mega in the email of photographs, because I cannot bring a single photograph, poster, writing. I can't bring any of my notes. They all have to be copied into my computer and email. I mean, this humiliation is absolutely total. And the only thing, when they come with his shooting jeep and his armored vehicle, is to throw the stone. And their aim is very, very accurate. Of course, it's only a stone. It doesn't dent the jeep. But their aim is incredibly accurate. And it's just a success. Oh, we have a... We're being faced by one now. I'll wait here a minute. We might get... Might get some shots. Six rifles, M16, and I'm with the young brother. He's 14, the greatest fighters in Galata. Lost all the rest of the family. There's just two of them out of seven now. There are five or six, seven ambulances facing me across the dual carriageway, which is Market Street. I'm going to go down with the mosque, unfortunately. It's evening prayer time. Let me try. And this is the Quran, which is actually the only thing they have to hold on to, let's say. And opposite me are six or seven ambulances with all their lights flashing, engines running, ready to go. As soon as they hear a shot, they're in gear and they're moving as the shot. They seem to instinctively know where the shot came from. 2 seconds later, they're picking up the kid. In front of the ambulances are two jeeps, are bristling with the M16s, Utsis, and Galilas. Galilas are very latest weapon. I understand its cost to the American taxpayer is some 10,000 JD. It's quite a sum. 6,500 for a Utsi, and 4,500 for an M16. Old M16s, 3,000. It's a lot of dollars, tax dollars. And on the right-hand side is a huge bulldozer. On the right-hand door, carriage about the size of a small house. It's unbelievable. It can actually pick up. I saw it this morning pick up a Chevrolet Savannah van, the whole van. Once, I think I said on the broadcast that to you that I felt with a bulldozer truck beside us could pick up the ambulance. Well, this morning it did. It wasn't the ambulance. It was another Savannah. It picked up the whole Savannah in its bucket. Imagine such a huge thing, and dumped it on top of a pile of earth to make a roadblock. There are thousands of children. I mean, literally, every road is blocked. There are two roads here. Everyone except the main road of the Alaykum Assalam. And 2 to 4 meter high heaps of rubble and junk and all cars and tires. And in every single hiding place, there are thousands of children who come out when the guns point away from them and throw stones and go back in and hiding. As soon as they see the guns moving, they hide again. But of course, a few of them inevitably get shot. Honestly, this stone throwing is such a strange thing. I once said to my daughter in California, I said, why did their mothers left them? She was very angry with me because she understood it better than I did. She said, you don't think their mothers left them? How are they supposed to do? Keep them in? They're already under curfew 24 hours a day. And it's absolutely true. There's no way you can stop them. And one child said to me, a 13-year-old, I said, please... I said, please try and be careful. I asked the boy, I said, look, you're too young and too beautiful to be shaheed, that is, to be murdered. And he said, without my stone, I have no dignity. That was a 13-year-old. That's quite an answer.